Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Memorial Day to you. And it's a three-day weekend, so you're hopefully enjoying a day off. Are you? Are you working a day? No, you got the day off. How nice is that? Kind of taking it easy this morning. Maybe pouring a second cup of coffee and just starting to figure out what you're going to do today. Hopefully you're going to have some time to reflect on what the day is. It's a solemn day of remembrance for everyone who has died serving in the American Armed Forces. It's a day that we're going to honor and reflect and have some testimonies and stories from people who have lost their lives on the battlefield. And this morning, we've got a couple of interviews coming up. One is going to be a mother reflecting on the loss of her son in Iraq. And then Bill Lunn, who's a reporter for KSTP-TV, he's an investigative journalist that took a story of a boy from his hometown and followed it. And I tell you, this is a story that you're just not going to believe. He's written a book. We're going to talk to him a little bit later coming up. But if you think about the military, there's a total active number of about 1.4 million people enlisted in the Army. Less than one half of 1% of all the people in the country. So they are really defending and protecting all 330 million of us. So how awesome is that, that they're doing that? And we need to honor and pay homage to them and then also reflect on the people who have given their lives on the battlefield. Paul Tsongas, the great senator from Massachusetts, who's no longer with us, he said, America is hope, it is compassion, it is excellence, and it is valor. And we're going to hear all of those qualities in the testimonies we're going to hear coming up in this hour. I am so glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold with you today on this Memorial Day. Thanks for being with us here. We love you listening, and we thank you for supporting Faith Radio. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to the show. It's so nice that you're with us today, and happy Memorial Day as we continue our Memorial Day celebration and our tribute to the men and women who have served, done so with bravery and courage, and then some of them we lose in battle, and one of them was a brave soldier named Daniel Olson, and this is the 10th anniversary of his angelversary when he went to be with the Lord 10 years ago. And I thought it would be a wonderful opportunity to have a conversation today with his mother, who is in studio with me. Her name is Gwen. Gwen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, your very handsome son, Daniel, tell me a little bit about him.
He was very much an introvert. It was kind of hard to know about him. He was quiet and didn't express himself much, but very sweet, liked to be part of things, but not to stand out or be in the limelight at all.
Mm-hmm. And did he have a natural interest in the military, or was it something that was a tradition? Was his father or grandfather, or was there someone in his past that inspired him?
Not that I know of, although grandfathers and his father were all in the military, but he didn't show any signs to us. Like I said, he was an introvert. Until more around 17.
Mm-hmm. And what happened at 17? Did he say, gosh, Mom, I want to join the service?
I think actually a recruiter visit started his interest. And then when he turned 18, he enlisted.
Okay, so what were your feelings at that point when he said, I'm actually going to go do this, and now I'm 18 and off I go? How did that make you feel?
When he was talking about it when he was 17, I wasn't going to sign papers before he turned 18.
Uh-huh.
I felt like it was kind of an impulsive decision. But when he was 18 and did it, I told him I'm behind him 1,000%.
Mm-hmm. So when he went off to start his service, where did he go for boot camp and training? And what, he was with the Marine Corps, is that correct?
Yep.
And that's the tough guy one, isn't it? One of the tough guy
I
ones.
I think
they're all
so.
Tough. They're all
yeah.
tough.
I wouldn't make it through them, but yeah, he went out to MCRD. That's in California for his training.
Mm-hmm. Where in California is that? Do you remember?
It's near San Diego.
Okay, I think I know where that is. Yes. And then he was deployed. How long after that? Was he at boot camp for several months? And I don't know how long Marine Corps training is.
The boot camp is about 13 weeks. Okay. And then they have their MOS kind of. And he was infantry. So then he went to the School of Infantry and did a lot of training until his first deployment.
Okay. So infantry would be more specialized skills, combat, guns, hand-to-hand, everything. So he's learning how to be the frontline kind of soldier.
Yes.
Yeah. And how does that make you feel as a mother?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I thought he was this, I didn't picture that being something he'd really like, mm-hmm. but I do think he grew up between sisters in a very girly house. So maybe this was what he needed all his life, was to go do boy stuff.
And this is massive boy stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep. Not just a game.
Yeah. So after infantry school, he now is going to look at his deployment. And where was that deployment to?
He was going to Iraq.
Iraq. And what time of the year was he being deployed to Iraq?
It was the end of January of 2007.
Okay. And he is now headed to Iraq, and he is going to be an on-the-ground boots soldier in harm's way right from the start.
Yep.
Okay. Now, what and how does a praying mother, how do you do it?
I actually went to bed clinging a little Bible like a baby does a security blanket, praying constantly. I had told him that every night at 9 o'clock I was going to pray for him, kind of thinking if he did that too or was aware of what time it was, he would just know. That moment I was praying for him, and in my mind, if he had a chance to pray too, it'd be kind of like where two or more are gathered in my name, I am with them.
Uh-huh. So you would be praying for him every day, and you would be clutching your Bible at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're all too aware of the dangers that your son is in. Is he your only son?
Yes.
Yes, he's your only son, and he's 18 or 19 years old. On the battlefield in Iraq, and you go to bed every night praying for him and hoping and praying that he's going to be safe. So talk about what happened to Daniel.
He was on the rooftop of a police station, kind of guarding. This station had been attacked by suicide bombers, and he was shot by a sniper. That's about all I know. I don't know too many more details.
Mm-hmm. And how long had he been there?
He had been there 8 weeks, seven which we had no communication. He knew right away. He called us just a couple days after getting there, saying he was going on some kind of mission and we wouldn't hear from him in 30 days, which turned out to be 7 weeks.
Mm.
And then when he finally did call, it was just very quick, and he couldn't tell us much.
Tell me what it's like when you get that news that your dear son, Daniel, has been taken out by a sniper. And I'm trying to put myself in your position where you're a mom, and you're worried about your son, and then this news comes in. And I'm just, you know, it's so devastating to hear and so sad, and yet you're a person of tremendous faith. So I want to talk about that a little bit as well. But how do you get that news? Someone knock on your door, or they call you? What happens?
The doorbell rang, and I was having a nice, peaceful morning. and I opened the door, and there were two Marines there and a police officer and a chaplain. And the looks on their faces made me know.
Mm.
There's just a whole bunch of thoughts in my mind at one time. One is, I have to be dreaming, like digging my fingernails in my leg, trying to wake up. Another one is knowing, why else do they come to your door? And a big one was just like, God, what is he with you? I just needed to know God was in control.
Mm.
And then the shock. The shock is a blessing. Like, it just doesn't sink in. It's like you're dreaming. But I knew the only way I was going to put one foot in front of the other is knowing God is in control.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew the number of Daniel's days before he was even born.
We get that out of Psalm, I think it's 139, that all the days that we have ordained for us have been established before we even have one.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's a lot of consolation for a mother who was just told her 19-year-old son is now gone.
It actually is what I had to cling to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not like Earth did this.
Yeah.
Not giving Satan or Al-Qaeda or anyone else control.
Mm. So you're giving God control, and God is the one that ordained his days, and God is the one that made the call.
Yep.
Yeah.
And with a little more processing, I got to be his mom.
Mm.
God picked me to be his mom for the time he was here.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to talk to Gwen about how you pick up the pieces moving forward. More with Gwen Olson in just a minute. Welcome back. We are in studio with Gwen Olson, mother of Daniel, who lost his life in combat. And we're trying to process all the information about what it's like to have a son that goes into combat and then to get that news that you have lost him. And how does your faith come into play, and how do we pick up the pieces going forward? Talk about, if you would, just the start of having to process and pick up pieces, because you've got two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
You just lost a brother, and you just lost a son, and there's unimaginable pain. And as a military mom, what is the process? Does Daniel's body get brought back to your hometown? What happens?
That happened on a Monday morning that he was killed. They didn't know. They said his body could take up to 3 weeks, but it came pretty fast. It was that following Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
This was all Easter week.
Oh,
so
boy.
The Monday after Palm Sunday,
mm-hmm.
His body arrived that Saturday.
So the day before Easter.
Yeah. And Easter was not even on my radar that week, because it was all
a blur, wasn't it?
Yeah, blur. Yes. And funeral planning and... Yeah, his body came in on a plane, and we followed it to the funeral home. I was actually very afraid. You know, they were going to open up the casket so we could see him. And I had a big fear of that, thinking as long as I didn't see him, still a possibility it can't be true.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a big fear of that moment. But when I walked in there and looked at him, I didn't have the reaction I thought I was going to have. I'm not going to remember it exactly, but a voice in my head was saying, "Why are you looking for him here? He is risen." And later it dawned on me the next day was Easter. My daughters both are very faithful too. I remember one of them saying, "Daniel's with God for Easter. I'm jealous."
Hmm.
I don't think anyone in our family ever felt sorry for Daniel, but we kind of feel sorry for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm almost wanting to pause the interview so I can burst into tears. The whole scenario is just so difficult, to think that you're following the casket to the funeral home and then seeing your son who gave his life in battle, protecting our country. We're now looking at the 10-year anniversary of his death. You gathered some friends and some former Marine friends for an activity over the weekend, didn't you, at your house?
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about that, because life goes on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
As much as we hate to think that it does, but it does.
Well, God gives you what you need. We've had so much support and prayer and friends, and we call them family, friends that have become family.
Family, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the activities we got real involved in, there's an organization called Tribute to the Troops. They're a bunch of motorcyclists that on the weekend closest to 9/11, they do a ride and visit families of the fallen.
Mm-hmm.
So that following September after Daniel died, this bunch of motorcyclists came to our house and they get off and they line up and they hug you and they promise never to forget. And we were so blessed by that. We've been riding with them ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And on Armed Forces Day, they do a revisit of families. So we decided to receive this visit, and I thought it'd be kind of special to invite in some of the Marines mm-hmm. that were close to Daniel. And four of them made it. We just spent the weekend with them, and then this ride came. You know, we visited the cemetery. We all went to the Fort Snelling Chapel church service together.
Nice.
I'm still feeling very blessed by it.
I bet. Now, Gwen, I'm real curious as to how your faith has evolved, has changed, has grown in the last 10 years, because what a significant event and something that I would imagine you wake up every day thinking about, Daniel, don't you?
Yeah.
You can't help it, can you?
I mean, the day before he died, I probably didn't either know I have the faith or have the faith mm-hmm. to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, people say, I don't know how you do it. I don't think I could do it. And it's like, I would have said the same thing the day before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like it's just real time him giving it to you when you need it. And now I know I have the faith to get through it. I didn't the day before. And just being open to all, I call them God winks. He's giving you little winks every single day to know Daniel's okay and I'm here with you and blessings every day.
It's a little bit about God's sufficient grace. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really show up until, you know, he needs to give it to you.
Yeah. I remember reading The Hiding Place by Corrie ten Boom long ago before. I mean, I didn't grow up a believer.
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to be, but I didn't have the environment or I couldn't just decide to believe, even though I wanted to.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't make myself believe. But there's a little part in that book where Corrie ten Boom is little and she's worrying about her parents dying. And her dad says something about, when do I give you your ticket to get on the train? And it's basically just before she's going to get on or not until she needs it.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote that down somewhere.
Really?
And I wasn't a believer at that time, but I liked that little story. And that's my illustration of it. I didn't have it ahead of time, but he handed it to me when I need it. And he does that every day still.
Mm-hmm. I do love that illustration. I do remember that from the book. And I think little Corrie was saying she wanted to hold the ticket, you know, a half a block in advance of getting on. And the answer was, no, I'll give it to you as you're stepping up onto the train. And I think that's a great illustration, Gwen, of how God met you in a time of need, and you didn't get it until you actually needed it. And that's probably a good reminder for all of us that we need to just trust God that he would be there for us.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, as the family now, you know, they say that time heals, you know, some of the wounds in life. And I'm always kind of on the fence about that. I sometimes think yes and no, you know. I think as, you know, you've got daughters now, how old are they now?
My youngest is 29 and the other one is 32.
Okay.
I always think that's an interesting line too. I think of it almost more like it's not a wound that heals, it's more like something was amputated.
Yeah.
And you find your prosthetic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And
you find a new way to live.
Yeah.
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 Because that wound doesn't go away.
Yeah. You still have that pretty major loss, but it doesn't just heal and get back to normal.
Mm-hmm. And how old would Daniel be today?
He would be 30 today.
Oh. And when is his birthday?
March 15th.
March 15th. Okay. So he would have just turned 30.
Yep.
Not that long ago.
Yep. And he had just turned 20 in Iraq when he was killed.
And he was, again, just to go back to the story when he was there, was he there roughly 8 or 9 weeks before he was killed?
Yeah, it would be 8 weeks.
Okay. So that is such a difficult story. But Gwen, I have to say, I appreciate you bringing your courage and your hope and you sharing it with others, because we need to hear stories like this. We need examples of godly men and women that can stand and say, no, God's in control, always has been, always will be, because there is so much sadness on days like this as we remember the loved ones who have served our country and gone and died. So I just thank you so much.
You are welcome.
It's Gwen Olson has been my guest in studio, and she has just told an amazing story of her son Daniel, who served in Iraq. If you just caught the tail end of this interview, you definitely want to go back and hear the whole thing. It's all about hope and all about a beautiful life well lived by her son, who served our country and died doing it. So, well, we'll take a short break and be right back. Memorial Day. So glad you're with us today. We're going to take a little news break. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for being with us today. Welcome back. You know, doctors have said I have a rare condition where it's almost impossible me to make any kind of sense in the morning until I've had a cup of coffee, and now we are ready to discuss Memorial Day issues and great stories, and this is one of the best stories I've heard in a while, and the author is in studio, Bill Lunn, who started off writing a story about this for the news. Bill's got a face for television, much like myself, although he was lucky enough to get on TV, whereas I didn't. But I'm not going to deal with my resentment this morning, okay? I'm just going to let it go, all right? But the book that he has written called The Heart of a Ranger, The True Story of Colonel Ben Kopp, an American Hero in Life and in Death. And as I just read the foreword, I've got tears in my eyes, Bill. I got to say, this is one moving book.
Yeah, it's really a compelling story, Bill. And it was one of those things I did as a television news story back in 2011. I come from a small suburb of Chicago, and I was reading my hometown news online, and it was a story about this lady who had gotten a heart transplant from an Army Ranger in Afghanistan. And I read on, and it turned out the Army Ranger was from Rosemount, Minnesota. And I thought, well, goodness gracious, I got to do a story about this. So we ran down to Chicago and did this neat story about Judy Meikle, the heart recipient, and Ben Kopp, the Ranger who died in Afghanistan in the summer of 2009. And we brought Jill Stevenson, Ben's mom, down as well. And to watch Jill put her hand over Judy's chest and feel her own son's heart beating in this person's chest, I know, it was really compelling. So the story just stuck with me, wouldn't go away. People would ask me all the time, what's the most touching story, compelling story? Which story moved your heart the most? And it was an easy answer. It was the story about this young ranger from Rosemount, Minnesota, who died in battle in Afghanistan and gave his heart to this woman from the Chicago area.
Let's take a little bit of a journey of Ben's story. I mean, he goes over in Afghanistan in 2009,
right,
and takes a bullet to the leg.
Right.
And all of a sudden, things don't seem that that grave until he gets actually to the hospital.
Yeah. So they were, it's really, and this is a big part of the book, the battle itself is probably 50 pages. It's a really complex battle that they were engaged in Helmand province. They were trying to get a very high-ranking member of the Taliban infrastructure, and they really, believe it or not, wanted to take him alive. Rangers operate almost exclusively at night. They almost do nothing during the day.
Really?
Yeah. And they had some complications going into, well, it's such an advantage for them. They can use their night vision goggles. You know, they don't, you know, other people are sleeping at that hour. The streets are less busy. It's a total advantage for them. So in this operation, things had gotten behind, and they were basically starting this operation in the very early morning hours in the light. As they did this, they came under a massive ambush. They were just ambushed. They were kind of split into four squads. They were ambushed, and as part of this ambush, there was a group of snipers that were pinned down. Ben and his squad rushed to the rescue of this group of snipers and recon guys. So in some ways, Ben is credited with saving the lives of six fellow Rangers as his kind of last act in life. And that's all in great detail in the book. But as you mentioned, yeah, so they're getting away. And as they're getting away, Ben is struck in the leg. The bullet goes through his leg, splits his popliteal artery, and he gets great care in the field. One of the best medics in the Ranger Regiment, this guy named Michael Melvin, is there, gets to him right away, puts a double tourniquet on. They stop the bleeding, and Ben is aware and conscious. They get him under fire back through this trench to this kind of safe house area. Unfortunately, they get him to a field hospital, Camp Dwyer, and there were several complications at the field hospital.
And this is a tough kid. I mean, he started off as a tough kid, and his great-grandfather was a World War II veteran.
Sure, and I'll answer that in two ways. One, Ben was a tough kid. He played football for Rosemont High School. He liked to box. He liked to wrestle. He liked to lift weights. He liked any kind of physical challenge with his buddies that he could find. He was definitely a tough kid. This is such an important part of the story. You're absolutely right. His great-grandfather... Leroy Rogers, exactly right.
Leroy Rogers.
He didn't have Ben didn't have a whole lot of strong male figures in his life, but Leroy Rogers was probably the strongest. And Leroy was this kind of very sensible post-Depression era World War II veteran. He fought with the Red Bulls in North Africa and in Italy. And by the way, we take a little trip back in the book to Leroy's story and
yes.
his battles in North Africa and Italy.
I got to say, Bill, that picture alone of Leroy at the Italian cemetery is worth the price of the book right there. It's amazing.
His wife, Marion, was such a gem. I interviewed her a couple of times, and I love people who do stuff like this. She saved every single letter that he wrote home from World War II.
Fantastic.
So I literally poured through hundreds and hundreds of letters to find little gems. You know, most of them were love letters. But in there were these little gems of combat and going through the mess line and driving a truck under, you know, German mortar fire across Italy, a bridge in Italy, and just great stuff like that. So that all found its way into the book. But there's a moment where Ben declares at, I think, 7 or 8 years old that I'm going to join the Army.
Yeah.
And his great-grandfather says to him, you know, kid, you can't join the Army because someone else tells you to join the Army. You'll know, you'll get a gut feeling, and you're going to know when the time is right. But it was right for him.
So strong. And Ben also just had a real heart for his friends, and was a great lover of people, wasn't he?
Yeah, he really had some great friends, and that was part of some of the fun I had was interviewing a lot of Ben's friends, and they just told some crazy stories about him. Kids will be kids. They steal some golf carts on a golf course one night, and they go riding around, and by the time they were done, there were three kids there. They swore that they saw Bigfoot. Well, there were only three people there. One of them, obviously, Ben, is no longer with us. And I interviewed the two guys who were there. They told such a consistent story years later that I thought, should I put this in there? I mean, it's Bigfoot. This is crazy, right? But nope. They insist what they saw that night was Bigfoot. So it made its way
in there.
Do you
notice that ever since smartphones, we don't really have any Bigfoot sightings anymore?
That's right. You'd think you'd capture it on
video. Yeah, you would
think.
Everyone's got their cell phone out. You'd think we'd see Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But as we learn about Ben, and we learn that at a very young age he wanted to be in the military, and yet he worked hard. He had a love for his friends. He had jobs in high school. He worked, made his own money. He made pizzas at a pizza joint. He worked at a gas station behind the counter, and then he goes off to war. And at 21, he's already gone.
Yeah,
he's just a kid who fought for friends and fought for his country and did amazing things and lived a life of great courage, and yet his life ended so soon.
Yeah, and you know, a thing I learned that I didn't know before I did this book, and I have great respect for anybody who serves in the military, but these Rangers will tell you, Yeah, yes, you fight for your country, but they fight when they're in combat, they're fighting for each other.
Oh, sure.
They consider themselves brothers, not friends, not buddies. They consider themselves brothers, and they mean that. And when they're in combat, they are fighting for each other. And that was something compelling that I know Ben considered. Ben was an only child of a single mother.
Oh, wow.
So for him to have brothers all of a sudden, that meant everything in the world to him. And I know he was fighting for his brothers for sure.
And they are absolutely fearless when it comes to protecting their brothers on the battlefield, aren't they?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's something else kicks in that says, I am here and I will do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. These guys are Rangers. I've gotten to know them over the last 2.5 years. They are among America's best warriors. They're special operators, highly trained. I'm so impressed with them. I interviewed 20 of them, I think 13 who were with Ben that day in that final battle of his life.
Yeah, it's just, it's really incredible, Bill. And I think we're going to take a break. I know when you started this book, it wasn't necessarily going to be a book about faith. You were just going to continue to do an investigative story on the life of Ben and sacrifice he made and the recipient of his heart.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, things start coming out of the woodwork, don't they?
Yeah, I'm a journalist. I didn't say I'm going to write a faith book. Yeah. I just sought the truth, right?
Yes.
And there are so many cool little aspects of faith in this book that we can talk about.
And I want to talk about that when we come back. Talking to Bill Lund, we'll take a short break and be right back. So glad you're with us today. I've got Bill Lund in the studio, and Bill, you might be very familiar with if you live in the Twin Cities area from KSTP Television, and he is on the 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock?
I do the 5 o'clock, the 6 o'clock, and 10 o'clock
awesome.
News.
Awesome, that's a long day.
It is a long day, but we love it. I love what I do.
And you started off really doing investigative journalism on the story and the life of Ben Kopp, really an American hero, this soldier who lost his life in Afghanistan at age 21. Mom said, and we were going to donate some of his organs, and his heart went into a recipient, into a woman in Chicago.
Yeah, they just weren't sure what they could donate. Ben had suffered a cardiac arrest during his care, and they thought they couldn't donate his heart, and then they did some testing, and of course the kid's a 21-year-old super fit special operator. They said his heart passed with flying colors. Not only did he donate his heart to a 57-year-old woman from Chicago, he donated two kidneys to two people from the Washington, D.C. area, as well as his liver to another gentleman from the Washington, D.C. area.
It's amazing. Now, his mother, Jill Stevenson,
right?
You and Jill went to Chicago and talked to the recipient of the heart. And tell me her name one more time.
Judy Meikle.
Judy Meikle.
Yeah.
I can only imagine that was about as emotional as it gets.
Yeah, well, you know what? Jill, by the way, is just one of the strongest people I know. And frankly, I was the one who was kind of falling apart.
Yeah.
Because Jill had lived it for 2 years by that point. For me, it was kind of new. And to see this miracle play out in front of me and to hear about, her talk with pride about her son, and then to feel myself, Ben's heart beating inside of Judy. Yeah, it was a little emotionally overwhelming, especially Judy lives in my hometown, not a mile from where I grew up. So it all kind of came together for me right there. Yeah.
God bless the mother to have the strength to be, walking that out.
She loves her son, and she'll say, don't talk about him in the past tense. Ben is still an energy that's out there.
Yeah, I love it.
And she works hard as a Gold Star mother to further his legacy and to share his story. And she has tremendous pride in him. It's not a source of soreness or sadness when you bring it up with her. She wants to talk about her son, and she wants to share that with the world.
I love her forward thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I know there was a very heartfelt and emotional prayer that went on at the graveside. If you have the courage to get through it, and can, I would love to hear it.
Just to preface, like you and I were talking about, I didn't start to write a book of faith.
Right.
It's just kind of what I found by seeking the truth. And to hear from all these different folks what was going on in Ben's life. Ben was seeking God. He was seeking Jesus.
Yep.
He was in a Bible study.
Awesome.
And as part of that, a chaplain, who by the way was from Ben's hometown, named Mike Shellman, would come around. And this prayer I'm about to read is from Iraq. So imagine these Army Rangers, these special operators, full gear, about to go out on a dangerous mission, right?
Yeah.
Well, the chaplain comes in to give them one little pep talk, and here's that pep talk, all right? We are working as God's instrument of his holy righteousness. These orders are coming from higher up, and this is a mission that we need to execute, and we're going to do it. And so we, therefore, can go boldly and with courage, knowing that we're doing great things. And I pray also, Lord, that in that moment, that our faith might become weak, that you give us strength. I pray on your behalf the Lord's protection on you and the Lord's strength upon you. And I pray for mission success and for your safety.
Fantastic.
I would never think to pray that way. I would never even think that people would pray that way. Yeah. So it was such an eye-opener.
It's very strong, very powerful. And then there was also a prayer, I think we have time for this, a prayer that was prayed by the chaplain at the graveside to honor all the lost people, but especially Ben Kopp, this brave American hero.
Sure. This is Ben's graveside at Arlington, right as they're about to lay him to rest.
Let me grab Kleenex, first of all.
This is Captain Jeff Strucker, by the way, who is a
really?
Very well... You know
oh,
who Strucker
I know Jeff.
Is. Says, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a key figure in Black Hawk Down, if you don't know who he is. But he says, Jill, family, friends, fellow Rangers, and friends of Corporal Benjamin Kopp, we've brought his body now as far as we can take it. We brought him to his final resting place. The Bible says that God created all of us out of the dust of the earth, and one of these days into the dust of the earth our bodies shall return. And it's only fitting that Corporal Benjamin Kopp should be buried here in this honored place, writing a new chapter in Ranger history. He's buried among Ranger brothers from Omaha Beach and Point du Hoc, from Cisterna and Anzio. He's buried among brothers in the long-range reconnaissance patrols of Korea, Vietnam, from Point Salinas, Rio Hato, and Torrijos, Tocumen. He's buried among brothers from Iraq and Afghanistan, and here among some of the greatest patriots at Arlington National Cemetery. Corporal Benjamin Kopp will be laid to rest in just a moment. Picking that up now, the Bible says, this is not the end of the story. It says, for a man of faith, there is still another chapter after death. In the first book of Thessalonians, chapter 4, the Apostle Paul writes these words, but we do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about those who have died, so that you may not grieve as others who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have died. For this we declare to you in the word of the Lord, that we who are alive, who are left until his coming, will by no means precede those who have died. For the Lord himself will command a cry, and with the archangels and the call and sound of trumpet, God will descend from heaven, and the dead in Christ will be raised first. And then we who are alive and who are left will be caught up in the clouds together with them to meet the Lord in the air, and so will we will be with the Lord forever. And the Bible says, therefore, encourage one another with these words. Because of Ben's faith in Jesus Christ, this is not the last chapter. And one of these days, all men and women who share his faith will one day spend eternity with him. We brought him to his final resting place. This is where his body is being laid to rest. But right now, upon Ben's faith in Jesus Christ, his soul is with God in heaven. And those who have faith will spend eternity with him there. Ben was a great warrior. He was a patriot who loved his country, loved the Ranger Regiment, and loved his family and friends. With Ben's life, he honored this flag, and now in his death, this flag will honor him.
Wow, a wonderful testimony to his faith and service to his country. Just really amazing. What have you learned in all this? I mean, this has that had a big impact on you? You wanted to write a book about it.
Yeah, like I said, it was just a story that I couldn't, you know, couldn't get out of my system.
I get it.
You know, we do things and we move on. We do things, move on. And this one refused to leave me.
Yeah.
And I think it was a big part of it was that faith aspect. And then how do you put that into a book? That's a very long passage there, Bill. And I thought, do I need to trim that? Do I need to cut that?
No,
I didn't. I left it just the way Jeff said it. And thank God somebody was at that site. They videoed his whole graveside service at Arlington. So there was no transcript.
Yeah.
I got to watch the video and I just transcribed it myself. So thank goodness for that.
That's beautiful. I highly recommend getting your hands on a copy of the book, Heart of a Ranger. Probably the quickest way to do it, just jump on Amazon.com.
Yep. It's cheaper on Amazon, too.
Otherwise, I'm sure, Bill, you got a trunk full of them. And
if you see me driving the street, chances are I probably do have one in the trunk. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Thank you so much for sharing the story. And we're so delighted that you were able to make this such a powerful story for us to have access to. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here, Bill. We certainly appreciate what you guys do here.
Oh, thanks so much. And happy Memorial Day and have a great weekend. That was Bill Lund. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for listening. love that music. And that wraps up our big Memorial Day show. In Psalm 116, verse 15, it says, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his faithful servants." So many have paid their service. They've gone onto the battlefield. They have fought for their country. They have died in service, and we need to honor them today as we're doing. And I just want to extend my heartfelt sympathy to all of you in the listening audience who have lost a loved one in combat and are thinking about them today. My dad didn't die on the battlefield, but he did serve in the war, and so I'm honoring him as well today. And I don't know what you have planned for the rest of the day. Are you thinking barbecue, maybe burgers, maybe a little grilled salmon? Let me know, because I'm happy to come over and eat either one of those. You just call and invite me. I'll be there. Have a great Memorial Day. See you tomorrow.
Mama, shrimps and rice, they're always very nice.